For those of you who know me, and those of you who don't, you'll just have to take my word for it, but for those of you who know me, it will come as no surprise to you that one of my favorite things to do is to preach. I got my first shot as a senior in high school on a youth Sunday at St. Martin's Episcopal Church in Houston, Texas. I had a few opportunities to preach as a college student in a campus ministry, and then once I graduated from undergrad and went into full-time ministry, including graduate school and seminary, I began to preach more regularly. At times in my ministry, every Sunday, Sunday after Sunday, when I was a soul preacher at Thad's, the last church, where I was before I came here. One of my favorite things to do is to preach. And I will tell you that I have been dreading preaching today for more than 6 months. I don't mean to say that the dread of preaching on this particular Sunday is attached to the result of an election, because it is decidedly not. I mean to tell you that I have been dreading preaching on this Sunday because I have this sort of semi-consciousness around the reality that the vision that I put forth Sunday after Sunday is not one that we can accept, or not one that we can fully accept. What I mean to say is that as Westerners, as Americans, as Western Americans who live on the west side of our country, the Intermountain West, or it would include coastal West Coast Americans as well, it is particularly hard for us to suspend a belief that the cornerstone of our existence, that existentially the unit of existence, is the individual. And yet every Sunday, Sunday after Sunday, I stand before you executing on a mission that I know is folly, because our whole culture has brought us up with a worldview that at the end of the day, you or I, not us together, but you or I, are the unit that matters. And yet, I do not believe that to be true. I know where it comes from, and I acknowledge that reality. But Sunday after Sunday, I stand before you trying to deliver a message of like, no, no, it's not me. It's we. It's not you. It's y'all. It's all of us together. If you were in this church a couple of weeks ago, you heard me preach a sermon about this story that we have in the Gospels about a blind beggar named Bartimaeus. And I told you at the beginning of that sermon that I was preaching about the second most important thing for the Christian. And if you remember that story, blind Bartimaeus, a beggar, an utter outsider, utterly rejected by the culture. Not only is he blind, but he also has no source of power or income, whether you're talking about the social culture itself or about his place in the religious culture of the day. He was an untouchable. He was unclean. He had the lowest place of any human being on the planet in the moment and time of this story. He is even physically low. He's on the ground, and a crowd following Jesus, hungry for the message that he's preaching and teaching, seeking to embody, swallows Bartimaeus up. And in this moment of desperation, Bartimaeus cries out, and you remember his cry, "Son of David, have mercy on me, Jesus, Jesus, help me. I need help. I find myself in a place of powerlessness, Jesus, and I need your help." And if you remember the beautiful exchange, like, we tend to focus on miracles in the church, and that's cool, but I'm talking about something that's more than a miracle. If you remember this is not one of those stories where, like, Jesus, like, rubs some dirt on someone or spits on his hands and rubs it on someone's eyes. Do you remember what Jesus says? He just says, "Go. Your faith has made you well. Your faith has healed you." The very fact that you were able, get this, to see that you and I were connected, that we were meant to be together, that I had something that you needed, the very fact that you, a blind man, were able to see that it is about us together, that is what has returned the sight to your eyes. The second most important attribute of the Christian is the ability to ask for help. And I told you that the first attribute, the most important attribute for the Christian as we seek to embody the faith, is loving kindness. That's what I say every Sunday, right? Like, do we have such a sense of our own belovedness that we are able to deliver it one to another? Now, to be clear, number one and number two on the list are not on the list because that's what we do as individuals to be considered faithful people. No, there's a mechanism at work there, right? There's something that happens. If I am a person who is attached to my belovedness at such a profound way that the calling on my life, that the strategy of my life, that the architecture around which I design my life is built upon the delivery of loving kindness, then I am connected to you. Then I am not alone. I am not radically individualistic. The trajectory of my life is built toward loving connection. Same thing when we ask for help, right? I need you. I don't want to be alone, left to my own devices. I don't want, and I know this is so countercultural to everything you've been taught, including in many churches, especially in Wyoming. But you are not meant to pull yourselves up by your own bootstraps. You're just not. That's not how the story goes. We have this wonderful tale from the Hebrew Scriptures this morning about this really important character. But Christians don't really talk or have a sense of how important this character is in the narrative of the story itself. We get this little snippet about this guy named Elijah. And Elijah is you know, likely if you've sat in church, it's a name that you know, but you don't really remember exactly the whole story or how important Elijah is. You're like, yeah, I've heard this guy before. Maybe he was up on Mount Tabor when Jesus was transfigured. And you're like, wait, is that true? Is it that Elijah? Yeah, it's that Elijah. He's as important enough in the story that he shows up with Moses and Jesus. It's Moses, Elijah, and Jesus in the moment of the transfiguration. So we're like, oh, this guy is a major prophet. Not a major prophet like New Testament scholars think of major prophets. New Testament scholars think that major prophets are the writing prophets. They're like Isaiah and Jeremiah, those people who had a practice of putting words down to page. Elijah is a major prophet because he just stays connected to God. He has, in a moment in time when everybody is radically individualistic and scattered, Elijah maintains a connection to God. So just to go backwards from the story that we heard today, because you need a little more context for what's happening here. Israel is ruled by a king, and he's a nasty king. He's no good. He's a terrible king, and he has abandoned a relationship with God, and he has attached himself to Baal. And here's why it's important to have preachers or teachers. So Baal, you could say like, well, it's just another god. Well, sort of. But how we might hear Baal today would be like my own private god. Like I just, like, this is the one who I reach toward in order to get all the stuff that I want and all that I need, rather than this more cosmic and mystical God that comes to us in burning bushes and sometimes sends us away to foreign countries in order to inherit our destiny and to be connected with generations of followers. No, not that one. That one's too demanding. I want to attach myself to this private God. And you can have him too, but you have him on your own terms. Right? So Elijah is a truth teller in this moment in time to Israel. And he has gone to Ahab and he's like, man, we're in trouble here. And Ahab's like, I'm king, bro. I got my own private God. Like, careful what you say or I'm going to kill you. And so then Elijah is like, he's going to kill me. And he gets driven out into the wilderness. And this is awesome. He lives for a period of time in like a box canyon. There is a stream that flows through the Box Canyon. That's where Elijah drinks. Every day he drinks from the stream. And then get this. So we're meant to see that this man is connected to God and connected to creation. Every morning and every evening, ravens. Ravens bring Elijah bread and meat. Every morning and every evening, ravens bring Elijah bread and meat, and he drinks from a stream that flows through this box canyon where he is living. And then one day, right before we get to the story that we have for today, one day the stream dries up. And God says to Elijah, go to Zarephath, go to the city down the road. And what I want you to do is like connect with a widow. You're going to find a widow there and she's going to take care of you. No more stream, no more ravens. It's the widow, Elijah. It's the widow. And being connected to God and connected to creation, this cosmic mystical power, Elijah saddles up and he goes. And when he's outside of this city, he encounters a widow. There she is. What is she doing? She's gathering firewood. He comes to her and he says, widow, I am so thirsty. Could you get me something to drink? And she does. She brings him a jar of water. He drinks from the jar of water. After his thirst is satiated, he says, can I ask for just one more thing? She says, sure. Says, I'm terribly hungry. Could you give me something to eat? And that's where she's like, oh man, I'm sorry, Elijah, new friend. And this is like, I even like laughed out loud at the 8 o'clock service. I'm such a nerd when it comes to these stories. I like laughed out loud. She, like in this moment of utter drama queen, she's like, listen, I've got to tell you, I am out here gathering firewood so I can take this firewood home. I can break it up. I can put it in the oven. I can light a fire. I can go and I can get the last bit of flour and mix it with the last drops of oil that I have. I can mix those two ingredients together. I can combine them. I can push them into my stove. I can bake a loaf of bread. I will cut that bread in half. Half of it I will give to my son. Half of it I will feed myself with. And then we will die. I love that. The story says, so that we might die. Elijah's response is, can you trust me? Go. Make that loaf of bread and share it with me. And let's see what happens. Let's see what happens in a moment where we are not only living for ourselves. Let's see what happens in a moment when we are living for each other. Let's see what arrives on our threshold. And then you heard in the story, like each day, each morning, the widow wakes up, goes to the kitchen, and there's a little more flour and there's a little more oil. What you don't hear in the story is that the widow's son becomes sick and he dies. He dies. And then Elijah takes him upstairs, prays to God, and he resurrects. And then there's this detail in the story that's so important. That went on for 3 years. 3 years. Can you imagine living every day with daily bread? You wake up in the morning thinking, today's the day. No flour, no oil. And yet, every single day that you are living for each other, there is flour and there is oil. This morning, in my kitchen and in our room, I get up in the mornings on Sunday, and particularly on a Sunday when I'm preaching, and I just spend a little quiet time thinking about the sermon and reworking it. And this morning I was like, God, I should put some flour and some oil on my kitchen counter and just leave it there. Just leave it there as a reminder that this is not all about me, that we live together, and that God makes God's presence known in our lives when we have eyes to see and ears to hear and hearts that are soft and open and enough to receive. It is a beautiful moment. It is a wonderful story of how we are built for each other. This is what we do here in this place on Sunday mornings when we show up for each other. It's the point of this. And I know, like, if you look at this place just for a second, you can see that the preacher has to work against the architecture of the culture, right? Look how this building is put together. Here, move over, Chip, just for a second. You didn't have to go that far.
All right.
I might need you. This is a hard Sunday. The architecture of this place is such that we don't sit, you know, people don't sit like Chip and I are sitting with our arms around each other, but we're like forward facing, just like we're just a bunch of individuals sitting. But like, if you think about it, like, this is not an altar, this is a table. Half our service is a dinner party. But when we enact the dinner party, we're like, oh, it's kind of like a cafeteria. Like, would you come up here and would you get your dinner sort of like one at a time? And I'm like, no, it's communion. It's communion. So Western culture has influenced the architecture of the church so that you think you are individuals coming here to get the dose of religion that you need Sunday after Sunday in order to keep going. That's not it. That's not it. We're here because we are better together. That is the magic. And listen, listen, I don't care who you voted for. There are no winners and losers in this place. Everybody wins, and the grade is always A. Listen to the cadence of the story as it begins. Genesis 1. What's the defining note of Genesis 1? Goodness. Goodness. Belovedness is sown into every aspect of creation. Not just humanity, every aspect of creation. It is the ravens first feeding Elijah. Goodness is sown in to every aspect of creation. The second story. What's the second story about? It's about the collaborative experience of creation itself. Humanity walks in the cool of the evenings, arm in arm with God through the garden, surveying the beautiful, collaborative, connected creation. And then where do things go wrong? Things go wrong when we're like, I have an idea. I think I got this. I think I've got it. I don't think we need each other as much as maybe we thought yesterday when we were walking arm in arm. And then in Genesis 4, it really goes wrong, right? Where does bipartisan politics begin? It begins in Genesis 4. When God finds the offerings of a rancher, Abel, more pleasing than the offerings of a farmer, Cain. When we are living for ourselves, we have winners and we have losers. And what happens in between? Envy. And what does envy give rise to? Violence. And when violence arrives on the scene and blood hits the ground, all of creation cries out in grief. That's the cadence of the story. We are a whole. There is no unit other than the gift that we offer the other. It is in connection that we become creatures working in creation. Some of you woke up on Wednesday and checked the news and felt like you were a loser. And some of you woke up on Wednesday and checked the news and felt like you were a winner. But I am here to tell you emphatically on this day, from this place, there are no winners and losers. The grade is always A. Goodness and belovedness is inseparable from who you are, and that we were built for one another. If you need a reminder, then extend loving kindness to another person. If you don't have that in you and you need another reminder, ask for help and watch help show up on the scene like flour and oil or a raven. The mission has not changed from Monday to Wednesday. The mission is loving kindness. Loving kindness to friend and family. Loving kindness to adversary and even to enemy. He says to us, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Not because that's on a list of things to do, but because of become a witness of what that does in your life and the lives of those who are around you. At the end of the Gospel of John, not the very end, but the end before the very end, at the end of the Gospel of John, there is a piece of literature that scholars call the farewell discourse. It's sort of like Jesus and his disciples in the upper room. There's some anxiety about the violence that is brewing ahead. And then there's this aspect where Jesus is being like utter rabbi. It's like one last lesson. It's an affirmation of the relationship that he and his disciples share, the strength of the relationship that they share together. And he says to them, he says, do you know how people are going to be able to tell that you and I are connected? They're going to be able to tell how you and I are connected by the way that we love each other. Amen.